Hello, thank you for joining us for what should be a great game.
And fighting is there! Robbie Brady!
The fourth official couldn't allow him on because the fourth official never had a cheat.
Well, he never heated up the baby, did he? Unless he's breastfeeding, he should be all right.
Welcome along to the Football Family, our dedicated Irish football podcast here on the 42. It is me, Gavin Cooney, on hosting duties this week because David Snaid, well, he's found his voice, but he is now taking it away on holidays with him. But I'll hold down the fort, and I am joined, as ever, by Shane Keegan for what is an international football special. We're going to get to all the analysis and reaction to Ireland nil, Belgium nil in just a couple of minutes. But Shane, first of all, I want to know, how did that game make you feel?
Yeah, well, I suppose the important thing there, Gav, is the context around the game for me. So I was at the game with my local football club. The FAI ticketing, the way they're going about their ticketing obviously has been much discussed, I think, of late. But one of the good things that they do with these friendlies is they put offers out to clubs to bring their as many of their underage teams as they want. Basically, with a very, very good offer. It was €20 for a kid's ticket, and for every 5 kid's tickets you bought, you got an adult's ticket for €30. So that made it very, very worthwhile. So I was there with myself and my young lad and a few of his buddies, and then there was loads more from our local soccer club, Clore United, there as well. So it's a very different experience, needless to say, when you're at it in that sort of a way rather than being there, certainly in a work, guys, for the likes of you, or even where I'm just there with myself plus another adult, let's say.
Well, Shane, like, if you're surrounded by juvenile people or too easily distracted, it sounds a lot like the press box.
I had a feeling that's where you were going, all right. Yeah. And look, we were right down at ground level. You know, we were kind of close enough to the corner takers to shout at them and kind of get a reaction from them and that sort of stuff. The kids, that is, not me, of course. So it was, yeah, it was a very, very different experience and very, 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 very enjoyable in that sense. Obviously, the lack of a goal when you've got lots of kids, which is a little bit annoying, but they seem to thoroughly enjoy themselves anyway. How well I'm placed to properly analyze it, being kind of in that sort of a setting, I'm not 100% sure. But did I go away from the game? I probably went away from the game happy with the overall performance and happy with my overall experience to a certain extent, if that's a rough answer to the question you're asking.
Yeah, well, no one is going to be exuberant about it for a number of reasons. I think Joe McCarthy, I think it was, in the 42 WhatsApp group, I think neatly summed it up at halftime when he posted, "I'm not disappointed by this so far." Which felt like a pretty good way of summing the whole thing up. You mentioned the ticket policy there. We should talk about that briefly because I know people are naturally quite exercised about it. So, you know, like, the FAI season ticket is, I think, it's generally acknowledged that it's very good value. You know, you get 6 games there. It works out at €35 per head per game. If you go to each one, okay, you buy the season ticket before you know the matches, but, you know, England come out in the Nations League draw and it looks very, very cheap. And then for individual games, the FAI have had this policy in the last 12 months at least of selling games in two-match bundles. So, you know, I thought it was a pretty good policy to pursue, say, this time last year, where people would naturally pay €70 to go see the France game, and then it feels like you're getting the Latvia friendly for free. But using it for two friendly games at home when there's no manager against sides of a similar level like Belgium and Switzerland seems like a daft approach to me, to be honest. Like, it feels like, you know, like, I'm sure we both have had loads of anecdotal experience of talking to people to say, asking them, "Are you going to the Belgium game?" And they'd say, "Well, yeah, I was thinking about it, but I can't go to the Switzerland game the following Tuesday, so I won't go at all." So there are tickets now on sale just for the Switzerland game, €35 for an adult, and I think it's from €25 as a junior. But it feels like they got it wrong on this one.
And listen, I'll be honest with you, I was 100% in that bracket myself until this offer came out through the club of the club tickets. I had gone online when the tickets came out. And I think for myself, a friend of mine and both of our sons, there was no way that I was able to purchase tickets for less than what did it come to, like, the guts of, I think it was close to 150, 160 quid to buy just the four tickets for us, because we had no option but to go to both games. And look, I'm not the only one who I just wouldn't have been in a position. I'm not in a position to go to this Tuesday night's game. You know, I'm down the country. It's probably, you know, 2 hours of a drive with the traffic built in and all of that. Then you've, you know, my own young fella's only nine. You're conscious what time you're getting home at, all of that kind of thing. And I was essentially going to write off going to either of the two games until this offer came out through the club of the club option, which only had to. And that was the biggest appeal, was that the club option, the one to bring the Clovery Night kids, was one game. It was absolutely ideal. I can't wrap my head around the other. I just don't see how it makes sense. I think you've phrased it well. For, you know, if you're putting a small game with a really big game, well, then you can see how it justifies it, because you do feel like the second one is free. But this time round, the way it was packaged made absolutely no sense to me, and I think the attendance showed it, didn't it?
Yeah, 38,000 was the official number read out. I thought the crowd looked like a 38,000 crowd, but a lot of people disagreed with me, so fair enough. I mean, not to go too far there, Ted, but I'm not great at judging numbers of people there out there. No, I think I do agree with you. I think it's a package or a policy that works, like we say, for the big game, small game, France, Latvia. It worked even for Netherlands and New Zealand at home, say. And it might even work across two different windows, if it's a June and September, or September or October, etc. But it feels like an own goal here. And now, obviously, the tickets are on sale for Switzerland, the Swiss game alone. That was always going to happen. Like, it would make no sense to stop the ticket sales at Saturday, even if you've got half them still to go. But it is naturally making people now more pissed off. You know, people who would have gone to the Belgium game, but didn't go because I'm not going to make the Swiss game. Then they're like, oh, hang on a minute. They actually can sell them separately. So I think the FAI have kind of done a broadly good job on tickets over the last couple of years, in my opinion, in terms of the pricing has been broadly competitive. Definitely compared to like GAA tickets and rugby tickets, especially, are so much more expensive now. But this was an own goal, because people won't be fooled. And basically what the FAI are saying with this is that ultimately, when it comes down to it, we'd rather have your money than you have be in the seat to cheer on the team.
Yeah, and I'll be honest with you, I will be amazed if they manage to sell too many tickets for Switzerland alone, based on the fact that I think a huge amount of people will find people who have bought the too much package because they only wanted to go to the Belgium one, and will just take their Switzerland ticket because they're not able to make the Swiss game, you know, and just pick up freebies that way. So I'd be stunned if they manage to sell too many independent tickets alone for this tie, to be honest.
Yeah, another reason why they're struggling to sell tickets for these games is that there is no permanent manager. They're friendly games. They don't really mean anything. Most friendlies are meaningless. So I feel like these have an added layer of no meaning to them because John O'Shea, we are told, is the interim manager. I know there's speculation is rife now that he'll end up getting the job full time because, well, can you blame us for speculating, really? I mean, we know Lee Carsey's out. Now, I think it's been me and David's understanding that Carsey's been out for quite a while now. I mean, we started getting soundings as to that extent, to that end, in early February. But it definitely looks to the rest of the country like he pulled out in the last couple of weeks. But I don't think that's quite the case. But between the fact that Carsey, their main candidate, is out, the fact that Eileen Gleeson, we were told, was not going to be the permanent women's team manager pretty much right up until the moment she was unveiled as the permanent women's team manager, and the fact that, you know, Sky weren't expected to be the sponsors until, lo and behold, Sky announced that they were the sponsors. Not that, obviously, the FAI seemingly forgot to announce it, didn't send a press release. So all of that is making people speculate that it is going to be John O'Shea in permanent charge. I guess we have to take them at their word and say that O'Shea won't be in permanent charge, that they've got this guy lined up. So granted, maybe there's not a whole lot we can learn from the game if there's going to be someone else in charge in June. But for what it's worth, and obviously it's a good audition reel for O'Shea to learn a bit about him as a manager. What were your impressions? Like, what did we learn about O'Shea and how did he set the team up?
How much am I allowed to bask in the glory of my attempt this time last week to name the starting 11, which was fairly on the money, Gab?
Did you get it right?
Fairly on the money. Okay. Yeah, well, remember we spoke about the shape, and I said I did like the idea of the 3-4-2-1 with Smodics and Ogbeni as the two behind Ferguson. I think the only one that I was, I don't know what I've predicted Smallbone to get the start ahead of Knight. And I was kind of caught as to who was actually going to play the left wing back role. I thought it might be maybe Coleman right and Matt Doherty left. But again, the three centre halves, I think we called the three centre halves because they were kind of the only three centre half options if he was going to go with a back three. So look, he probably picked the team that I would have picked if I was the person in his shoes, I suppose, is the way I'd put it. Mikey Johnson maybe being the exception, but I don't know, can you play Mikey Johnson in the Robbie Brady position against a team like a team as good as Belgium? So I was very, very happy when I saw the team come out. I know a lot of people feel that we need to, you know, whatever didn't work, let's get away from it. And Stephen Kenny is seen as didn't work and his shape is seen as didn't work. So let's get away from that. I don't agree with that. I don't think that's the case. I think each manager has to come with the shape that they want to use, regardless of what shape the last manager used. And I do think the shape we used the other day is potentially the one that best suits our players. In terms of the performance within that shape, I thought there were positives. I thought the three centre-halves looked very comfortable. Ideally, you would like to have a left footer on the left of those three. There's no doubt. I think Liam Scales is going to stand a really great chance if that was the shape we used going forward on the left-hand side of those three. I had spoken last week about the fact that the previous weekend's performance for Burnley, I thought was Josh Cullen's best performance in a long time. I thought he carried that into the Irish performance. I don't think he was outstanding or anything major that you write up, but I thought it was his... You know, I thought it was a pretty good performance from him in an Ireland jersey, which we maybe haven't had from him in a little while. So I thought it was that was definitely a big positive for me. He got the man of the match. I don't know what I've gone that far. I thought, look, I'm prone to coming down on the Seamus Coleman side whenever I can, just because I adore him. I thought he was excellent.
Shane, I think this is going to be the classic podcast between two white Western males, in the sense that we're just going to sit here agreeing with each other. But I fully agree with you. I thought Coleman was robbed of the Man of the Match award. I thought Coleman was pretty good. And I guess, was it Virgin Media who picked the Man of the Match award? I really thought it was Coleman. But sadly, we are the enlightened few, because I tweeted at the match that Coleman got Man of the Match, but the Coleman was robbed. And while some people agreed with me, a lot of people disagreed with me, and in quite violent terms, I have to say. I'll just pick...
really?
Yeah, no, have I got Ed Freeman here? Thank fuck the 42 is behind a paywall, so I won't have to read your nonsense if that's your take from the game. Should be refunds offered to anyone who has to pay for your match report of today's game. Stuff along this line. Like, people really thought that Coleman didn't have a good game, and I guess maybe... I don't know. Maybe, I guess that's people watching on TV, and when you watch on TV, you kind of have to follow the ball. And once or twice, Coleman let himself down in an attacking sense. There was one switch of play in the second half from Smodics.
Yeah, miscontrol.
That he miscontrolled, but bloody hell. I mean, at 35 and facing Jeremy Doku, and he didn't get beaten by him once. That was a foul. That was a foul in the corner flag at the start of the second half, as far as I can tell. Like, he completely shackled him. He's brilliant.
He didn't give an inch, Gav. He just got so, so tight. And like, that battle was right in front of me. So I was right down by the corner flag on that side where Doku was running at Coleman. And it was just intriguing to watch. And every time Doku got it, I was kind of like, he's going to get past him this time now. He's Coleman's doing too well. His luck's going to have to run out eventually here, kind of a thing. But no, he was just on him every time. And, you know, really did really well in stopping Doku even getting turned and going at him. And on the occasions where he did get turned and going at him, look, Doku was one of the best around at doing that, and jinking and chopping and changing direction. And you know, now to be fair, he had a really good guy in front of him in Ogbeni. You know, Ogbeni is absolutely excellent at doing all of that kind of thing. And it was actually, again, I just, you know, I know this shouldn't feed into whether he should get the man of the match or whether he's the best player, but just his demeanour, his body language, his leadership is just outstanding. There was I think it was after the substitutions, was it? So who came on in that position on the right-hand side of the two in behind?
Was it Festi Abasetta?
Yes, that's exactly who it was. And they went on a counter-attack. And Festi went sprinting back, and Coleman got back as well in that. But eventually they snuffed out the danger. But as soon as they had snuffed out the danger, Coleman just walks across to Festi and just, you know, a pat on the back and, you know, super stuff, well done, brilliant recovery run, you know, that kind of stuff. Before then kind of going inside, I think Omar Bamadeli had played a part in sniffing that out as well, comes across to him then as well, you know, a pat on the back from him, you know, as much as say, you know, we've got this, guys, you know, this kind of, you know, us as a trio here, we've got this guy tied down kind of a thing. And he's a super bit of stuff. And I would have thought we'd, you know, let's be honest, I'm, along with a lot of other people, a massive, massive, massive admirer of him. But I wouldn't have headed into 2024 thinking that he should still be a starter for Ireland. I wouldn't have, if I'm honest. And then you see that performance the other day and I'm like, disgraced at myself. I'm writing him off before he should be wrote off.
No, you've let yourself down there, all right. He should absolutely be one of the first names in the team sheet still. Like, I know he's 35 and we equate that to a loss of pace. And look, chances are, every winger he's going to come up against from now on, he'll be slower than them. But it doesn't seem to matter. You know, that's the thing about it. Obviously, we saw with Mbappe last year. I mean, the last two games he played for Ireland, he shackled Mbappe and Jeremy Doku. I mean, like, he's still a really important option. And I think you make a very good point as regards his leadership. It is notable that I do think people around him play better just because he's there. And he was such a loss last year, because so many of Ireland's mistakes last year, like what really cost them in Greece and at home to the Netherlands. You know, Stephen Kenny obviously got a lot of stick for not being able to adjust tactically, and that's part of the story. But the players also need to be able to adjust in game to things by themselves, because you can do a lot of planning, but you can't plan for absolutely every scenario. You have to be adaptable on the pitch. And I think Coleman helps them do that. O'Shea spoke afterwards about wanting to get experience at wing-backs either side of what was a very young back three. Pretty experienced now, in all fairness, but all of them are under the age of 23. And I thought Brady and Coleman did that. And I thought Belgium really targeted that side initially because we'd seen Greece do it and we'd seen the Netherlands do it in the home game last year, where they put wingers really high and wide to try and pin the wing-backs. And Tedesco at Belgium did it in a slightly different way, in that the right-sided attacker, Bakayoko, went really high and wide down Ireland's left. But down Ireland's right, they put the left-back, is it Denman? He's a horse. That's the name of a horse as well. But is it Olivier Denman? I think that's how you say it.
I think so, yeah.
He pushed way on. Like, he was in the attacking line, really. And then that allowed Trossard cut inside and like create space and in theory create havoc. And Coleman, having struggled with it initially, I thought he really helped Omar Bamadeli, especially through that. You could always see them communicating and passing one guy on to the other. Trossard didn't really affect the game in a massive way. He created that chance that Tielemans headed wide. Like, you can only imagine Kevin De Bruyne in the exact same role. Like, the team is, you can see even there how the team is structured to bring the best out of De Bruyne. So I really thought Coleman's communication and his leadership and all that was so important. And
look, when I say that, you know, in my head I'd be thinking, you know, he shouldn't still be a starter for us in 2024. I'm more so saying that on the external facts rather than Seamus Coleman as a person. Like, tell me another 35-year-old wing back in world football. Like, I'm not sure I know of any. Like, you know, it's not something we see. It's not something you see, is somebody of that vintage playing in a position that, you know, ordinarily is one where you expect the highest kind of run rate on the pitch. But look, you couldn't even contemplate leaving him out based on what we saw the other day, in my opinion anyway.
I know. And like, only a couple of short weeks ago, you had this guy ranked below Kyle Walker. Like, it's unbelievable. Some serious reverse farting from you on Coleman. Just while on the topic of players who stood out, I thought Nathan Collins' best game for Ireland in quite a while.
Yeah, very,
no mistakes,
very solid.
Really. And I thought what I like to see him doing, and he doesn't do enough of it, but he has it in his locker, those big switches of play out of the right-hand side. We created a couple of chances through that Smodics, remember that Smodics chance in the second half, he scuffs it.
Yep.
Ogbene gets into the box, he lays it off to Smallbone, who himself lays it off to Smodics. That came from a big switch of play and a super touch by Ogbene to kill it. He probably doesn't do that enough, because the more concerning parts of the performance was that they did relapse into their worst habits from last year, and I think this is a consequence of playing the back three. it becomes too easy for the three centre backs just to take the easy option and pass it around among themselves, pass it laterally. Like, and we're going absolutely nowhere. So Collins, and they, you know, this is why I kind of would like to see a change from the back three, but Collins' ability to switch play was really good. And what were your thoughts on Sammy Smodics?
Yeah, I mean, I put forward the argument about the shape and that I thought he could play in that shape, in that position. And I think what I was saying was that the reason I wanted a Mikey Johnson potentially to be on the left in the left wing back role was that I would have liked the left wing back to go forward when we didn't have the ball and press the right full back and allow the left sided centre half behind him to come across into the left back position, if that doesn't sound too complicated. But that wasn't what we did in this, obviously. We just flattened out. They just flattened out into a four, which did mean that, to me, I thought Smodics was probably too far away from goal to do the kind of stuff that we would like to have seen him do and to have any proper link play with Ferguson. So I'm not sure if... I'm not sure if that system, certainly that position within that system, gets the most out of him, would be my initial thoughts on it. Again, you know, I would like to see us be more of a 4-4-1-1 out of possession, if that makes sense, with him being the one behind Ferguson when we don't have it and being in and around the opposition six rather than out wide marking the opposition's right back.
Yeah, I also think that, you know, we'll probably get on to the broader topic that O'Shea really didn't change too much, but like Smodics, like I thought he did pretty well. I thought he did really well to get that shot away from Ferguson's Niall Quinn to Robbie Keane style flick on in first half stoppage time. There was a couple of other shooting chances. He did that one I mentioned earlier. He didn't catch that as purely as he would have liked to.
He also gave the pass for Agbene's chance, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. That chance, by the way, Agbene was offside. Like, no one seems to have acknowledged this, that the flag definitely went up. Obviously, they didn't reference it on the TV coverage. So in my mind, because I was a bit critical of Ireland for not creating enough chances, and people got back to me to say, well, we created that one, but I had choked that off in my mind because it was offside.
Yes, I was completely unaware of that, I'll be honest with you. I would have had that down as one of our decent chances, yeah.
God, I've been trying to break the Ireland manager story for months, and the only story I've managed to break was that Ogbeni was offside on this chance.
It's a start, Gav.
But Smodics, I mean, Jason Knight and Jamie McGrath have done that exact role for Stephen Kenny, you know, where you've almost got two tens in support of the number nine, in this case, Evan Ferguson. One is kind of an out-and-out winger, like pacing winger like Ogbeni, who can come to feet, but will ideally gallop into space beyond the last line, and they've got more of a midfielder as the number 10 to drop off to take possession between the lines. So, you know, Smodics was not considered under Stephen Kenny. Obviously, O'Shea brought him in, but largely to perform a role that Knight and McGrath had done pretty well. So, yeah, I would be like you. You feel like some of his attacking quality was a little bit wasted, and you're shaking your head.
Yeah, 100%. Like you've got a guy who scored 24 goals, is it, so far this season, playing a role that Knight and Jamie McGrath have been playing. I mean, that, you know, that's a completely and utterly different prototype, in my opinion. Completely and utterly different kind of player. So no, look, there's no doubt that, you know, this, I would go with a Knight or a McGrath over Smodics in that position, if we're just choosing a player for that position. But I would also like to see us try and come up with a system that does allow for him to play to his best. And that's where I suppose I was putting forward the argument last week is, you know, do we have enough about us to play, you know, 3-5-2, and he plays right up there with Evan and still drops off around the opposition six when we don't have it, but we need to keep him centrally and in Evans, and Evan needs somebody to be close to him as well, because, you know, that's a performance that maybe we need to discuss as well, is Ferguson's own performance. But I didn't think Evan Ferguson had a great game, if I'm honest. And, you know, you never ever want to say negative things about him, really. He's just such a good fella. But I didn't think he had a great game, but I also thought that the way we tried to play, he suffered a bit because of that, because I thought he was quite isolated.
Yeah, expand on that.
There was a lot of times where the ball was being clipped up to him with a man absolutely down his back, and it was like I felt he looked like he did poorly in terms of trying to do anything with the ball coming up to him. But I think because as the ball is in the air, he's looking around and going, OK, is there somebody that I can give a little nod back to here, or somebody I can chest it back to here? No, there's not. OK, what am I trying to do? And kind of as that whole thought process is going on in your head, well, the ball's actually gone past you and it's just cleared the two of you and run on through to the keeper, or, you know, the centre half has just bundled you off the ball, or... You know, I just felt there was nothing. Very possible that there's an element of me just trying to come up with excuses for him here. I didn't think it was a good performance, but what else was he meant to do with the balls that were coming up to him? I really couldn't see how he could have done much more with what he was getting.
Because Adam Ida came on in the 70th minute, and he's another striker in good form with similar characteristics to Evan as well. And made no impact as well. You know, like Ireland, I think the biggest problem from the Irish performance was that Smodic's chance shot in the 66th minute. That was it. We didn't have another, I don't think we had another shot. You know, won a couple of corners, but that was kind of it. So that what you're saying there is that we've once again failed to bring the best out of Evan Ferguson here, which is an issue. And I know, look, he's out of form and with the penalty slips and it's unlucky. Maybe he should still score it. And he's obviously not playing his best stuff, or not playing at his potential level. But we talked last week, what is the Ireland manager's job? It's to bring the best out of Evan Ferguson, because he's most likely to convert chances. So, I mean, we've now tried it with O'Shea. He's a very similar setup to Stephen Kenny. Slightly more defensively minded, I think. I think we gave up a little bit attacking-wise to gain a little bit defensively. And it showed on a clean sheet that, in fairness, wasn't overly stressed by a Belgian team that, like, it looked like this was the underwhelming game in their two-match pack, you know, ahead of the England game. Like, I mean, they really felt, there were some Belgian players that really looked like they were there because they had to turn up, had an obligation to go to the England game in a couple of days. So if the system is still not suiting Evan Ferguson, why are we using friendly games, one of only four friendly games we have before the England game in September, why are we using friendly games not to experiment with the system that does bring the best out of him? Like, why are we prioritising a 0-0 draw here against Belgium that makes everyone feel a little bit better? You know, like, our friend Joe McCarthy feels not disappointed by this. Mm-hmm. But, like, we haven't answered any of the questions as to how to get the best out of Ferguson.
And this is the big... And even on paper, Gav, like, you look at the team before the game starts. Now, part of it is you look at the team, and part of it is you look at, well, what other options do we have? Like, what could we have actually done differently? It's so, so easy to say that, you know, what we did didn't work. Okay, well, throw out the alternatives. What would you have done that would have created more chances?
But something different, Shane. I mean, like, it really was, like, even down to look how we created the chances against Belgium. It's the same way we used to create chances under Stephen Kenny. From set pieces, that's how we won the penalty. And there's that Ferguson flick on for Smodic. From early in the first few minutes of a game, pressing high and turning over for the Agbene chance that was offside. And another Agbene chance that he flashed wide from the right-hand side of the box. And then a really smart kickoff routine that Ferguson headed over. That's how we created our chances under Stephen Kenny as well.
Yeah, and look, I suppose to stay within the shape that we used... I suppose if we were using that shape again, you would like to see that at least one of the 10s is trying to play as a second striker while the other 10 is trying to play as a creator. And maybe that bit of a balance could maybe try and create, give us a bit more chances. But when we flattened out into that 5-4-1 shape, I mean, how, in what manner did we possibly think we were going to be able to create chances for Evan within that shape? I just don't see how we could. And that's, again, like... a partner for him. I would love to see him with a partner, because Agbene has done that at times where he's tried to be his partner at times and then sprinted out to the right wing and helped the right wing back when we don't have it. But it wasn't that, what even wasn't really going on, to be honest with you, in this performance. Like, an actual partner, an Agbene who is willing to run in behind off the flick-ons and that kind of thing, and then maybe pull it back to him once we've got ourselves up the field, or a Smodic who's playing right up beside him but dropping into little pockets. Like, this was kind of neither of either. And then to argue against my formation, you know, is there a lot to be said for you go 4-2-3-1 and you put Mikey Johnson out on the left-hand side and you put Agbene out on the right-hand side and you say, this is it, boys, it's up to the two of ye to give Evan a couple of opportunities within the 18-yard box, be it from ideally beating your man and getting to the dead ball line and pulling it back from areas like there, you know, Alice, in the manner that City do. But if you just say to those two boys, what can you create? What can you create? But then that probably doesn't leave us as defensively solid as we were. So that would be O'Shea's argument back, I'm sure.
Yeah, and look, I mean, we have the Swiss game on Tuesday night. There is a chance that we will see a change of tack there and some experimentation. But John O'Shea said at his press conference today that, you know, if he had been told he's the permanent manager, he would have used this game for a little bit more experimentation. But if he's interim, he'll just focus on these two games and basically get the best results that you can. Now, that to me sounds like a pretty much a waste of time. In fairness, I don't necessarily think it's John O'Shea's fault. If he's been told he's only in charge for these two games, then he's entitled to do what's best for him, to be quite honest with you. You know, this is, if he's not going to be the permanent Irish manager, he can use this as an audition tape to get a job down the line. So it's in his best interests for the team not to lose to Belgium. And on paper, a nil-all draw with the fourth best team in the world is pretty good, even if the fourth best team in the world were missing the players that give them that status and had the basic interest, which would also give them that status as well. But like, are we not looking now at a massive, by another clanger dropped by the FAI in not having the manager in place here and not being able to use two of the four preparatory games that you have for September to experiment with new formations and we go back to the overall plan here to bring the best out of Ferguson? Like, if the FAI not drop the ball here,
Definitely. And look, I think, to be honest with you, I think O'Shea is in complete and utter limbo, right? Because I think if he definitely knows he's not getting the job, all right, if he 100% believes he's not getting the job, even then I think there's a little bit room for experimentation, because you're like, well, I can't do any major harm to my chances anyway. I may as well kind of go for this a little bit. Or if he knows he is getting the job, well, then he has said himself he would go for a little bit more experimentation. He's actually fallen between the two stools here, where I think he believes the same thing I believe, which is there is actually still a chance he could get the job. So therefore, what's he going to prioritise above all else is a really, really short-term result. And like I say, that's completely understandable from his point of view, but it serves absolutely no purpose in terms of developing or taking us forward.
Yeah. Now, I should say that I put that question to O'Shea today as regards, like, John, has anything changed in the last couple of weeks that we have not yet been aware of, that, you know, that this mystery candidate is not actually coming in April and that you will actually end up in permanent charge? And he said from his point of view, nothing had changed. But then again, he wasn't speaking like a guy that expects to be out the door in a couple of days. And that may be the case, that he's being lined up as the number two to whoever comes in. And that is a definite possibility as well, in all fairness. But, you know, all he said was just like, you know, my job is to focus on these two games, and whatever happens after that happens. Now, I Josh Hay presumably listens to this podcast if he's picking the team that you suggested last week. So I mean, no, this is meant as no disrespect to John O'Shea. But like, if O'Shea is now appointed on a permanent basis, the number three of the manager who they got rid of last year had this months-long process, then appointed the number three on the promise that he would be an interim candidate, were they then to give him the job on a permanent basis, having wasted two of the four preparatory games for September because they told him he would only be the interim, the FAI would be a laughing stock.
And and yet, I don't know. I agree 100%.
You think it can happen? Now, I don't know. I mean, me and David and all of the other soccer writers in the country are desperately trying to figure out who this mystery candidate is, and nobody knows. So if that's the case, obviously we know the FAI aren't revealing this person's identity. This person has not revealed their identity either. You know, I mean, I don't think I'm opening the kimono too much to say that all of the information that we've got around the people who are not going to get the job has all come from the candidate side of things. Not necessarily them talking themselves, but, you know, they tell people who tell people and you can figure it out. So neither side have said a thing here, which is unusual. It's not impossible, but it does lend conspiratorial thinking to the idea that maybe this person hasn't been identified because this person does not exist. Which, I like, if we end up in that situation, I think the FAI have a massive credibility issue. And that is not at all to pass comment on John O'Shea, who I think fans would actually quite like to have in charge now.
Yeah, that's it. There's two separate ways of looking at it. If this was presented as an option in isolation of everything else that's gone on, like you heard the roar that went up around the place anytime Brian Kerr come up on the screen. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Like, people, the Irish football public have kind of huge time for Brian, and rightly so. You know, Paddy McCarthy has accumulated an awful lot of experience in recent years. Glenn Whelan always strikes you as a solid sort of an individual. Look, it's still a management team, very, very short in experience. But I don't know, there is something about it that you'd be thinking, okay, I'm not sure we've ended up with the worst outcome in the world here. It's just the circus that's gone on around it. It would seem like an absolute fiasco. It would seem, but I just think, I don't know. Like, you look at politics and, you know, how do you deliver bad news in politics? You know, you drip feed it until by the time it's actually delivered, people know that it's about to be delivered. And I don't know, I'm starting to feel that's kind of, you know, last week I was the only mad Egypt who believed this could still be the case when we spoke, and now you're starting to sound like you actually might believe that this could be the case as well.
Well, there's been no drip feed from the FAI. It'll be a flood. I mean, it'll be famine, and then it will be flood as regards to this. So, which does give them the awkward issue of, you know, a lot of the country have thought it's been going to be Lee Carsley all along, in all fairness. Now, you know, David reported a few weeks ago that it would definitely not be him. But there's been enough speculation and enough silence for long enough from both parties for people, the average punter in the street, to get the impression that it would be Carsley. So the FAI do have a job on their hands to sell whoever is unveiled. And look, I'm still giving them the benefit of the doubt here, and I'm still taking them at their word that they have someone lined up and that will be unveiled in April. So anyway, we'll have to see when that will be. I mean, the women's national team have Nations League games against France, and then obviously England up until the 9th of April. So I'd be shocked if there was an announcement around those games. They don't want to overshadow those games. So maybe from the 10th of April onwards, we're going to be steeled for this announcement. Okay, Switzerland tomorrow night. No new injuries is the good news. Joe Hodge and Andrew Moran have been called up from the under 21s. John O'Shea says there will be a few tweaks. We think Bazunu will get a run and goal, and Kelleher will be rested. Obviously, your team predictions now are basically the Irish team that will be picked. So have at it. What would you like to see happen against Switzerland?
Well, again, that's the usual question of what would you like to and what do you think. I think there's a hell of a chance that the finishing three up top could possibly be the starting three. Does he give, like,
you wouldn't start Ferguson? You don't think that he has an obligation? Ferguson, you know, 21 games without a goal, missed a penalty. He doesn't have an obligation to stick by him.
Yeah, it's a tough one for him. I probably would stick by him. I probably would stick by him. That said, I think that's quite harsh on Adam Ada. I think he's always done very, very well for us, and I think it's, you know, if he's going to not feature, no matter, you know, if he's not going to get starts no matter how things are going, that'll become very, very frustrating for him. Very frustrating. And he will be thinking to himself, Jesus, if they're not going to give me a start in a friendly against, you know, Switzerland, after the alternative having a pretty poor game by his standards, I'm definitely not going to see much action in actual competitive games. So I don't know. I think, could John O'Shea sit down and have a conversation with Evan around, you know, I'm going to start Adam Ida, here's why I'm going to start him. Don't worry, it doesn't mean that there's any loss of faith in you whatsoever. You're top class, you're absolutely our number nine going forward. I just need to, you know, I just need to keep Adam's morale up as well, and you know, show that there's a lot to be said for form as well, because, you know, let's be honest, even at club level, Adam Ida, he's playing at a very different level, but he's, you know, he's certainly scored more goals of late than Evan has. But again, all of that is in the context that Evan is still absolutely our first choice number nine. Mikey Johnson for me is the one that absolutely has to start. You know, surprised he didn't start the other night, but within the context of the shape, I can see how they struggled to get him a start, because I would have chosen Sam Smodics ahead of him in that position, even though in the manner we went about it, it didn't really suit him. You could argue it would have suited Mikey Johnson better if that's the exact brief of the role that Smodics had to carry out. So I think he comes in there. I think Jason Knight certainly starts, whether it's instead of Smallbone or instead of Ogbene, you'd imagine Ogbene starts again. I would think he's so such a vital cog to it, and he's kind of always, you know, worst case scenario, he's 7.5 out of 10, and usually more than that, to be fair to him. Centre halves, I would think, have to stay the same, do they? I don't think there are any other options, bar a change of shape, obviously, and then one of them drops out.
Jake O'Brien, I suppose. Do you want to give Jake O'Brien, Joe Hodge and Finneas Az? You surely want to give these people debuts, like.
I would think off the bench, though. I would be surprised if they were trying from the start. I would say there's a good chance that O'Brien gets maybe the last half an hour of the game. I'd be surprised if he starts, but maybe there's not a whole lot to lose from throwing him in from the start. I suppose it'd give you a good idea where he's at, wouldn't it?
And would you change shape?
I would change shape, but still keep the back three, if that makes sense. Most people would quantify change of shape.
You'd be a 3-5-2 man. So it was kind of a 3-4-3, basically, against Belgium. So you'd be 3-5-2, get a man up beside Ferguson.
Yeah, but then what do I do with Mikey Johnson? I'm arguing with myself here.
This is the awkward thing, isn't it? I mean, we've got these attackers. You've got, okay, Ferguson or Ida as the number nine. But if you want to get Ogbene, Smodic, Johnston all on the same team, you've got to sacrifice centre back. I would love to see the back three binned, have to say. Just for the sake of something new, something experimental. The lateral passing among the three of them.
Yeah, but I have less of a problem with the back three there. I have less of a problem with losing a centre half. My problem with kind of the shape that you're recommending there is that we're losing a centre mid. I mean, if we're gonna go 4-2-3-1, well, now we've actually only got two out and out centre mids.
That's all we had yesterday, or on Saturday.
Yeah, I know, because Smodics was going out wide and Ogbene was going out wide. Yeah. It is kind of impossible to get Mikey Johnson into his best position.
Support
to Evan Ferguson from a central position in the same shape here while still having three in midfield. Do you know, I'm trying to play X's and O's here as to what does that bloody look like? And there isn't really a way. But yeah, I think there is a good chance he could flip it to the back four. And then you would
now
be
look, I'm overly interested in experimentation at this point. I mean, I want to get weird here. You know, I mean, let's try Keller in midfield. You know, I mean, okay, that's hyperbole. But I also think, like, okay, we've avoided defeat against Belgium. Solid result. First time we've avoided defeat in a match against a team ranked higher than us than the Ukraine game in Poland in June 2022. So we've done that. We've stopped the bleeding in terms of defeats. Like, what is the point in trying to draw? Or narrowly beat Switzerland if you're not going to learn anything about the squad? And that's
I'm guessing you would go back for Cullen and Knight as two midfielders, Mikey Johnson left, Ogbene right, and Smodic behind Ferguson.
I think so, yeah. Maybe try Azaz rather than Smodic, or just try some approach that's given Ferguson more than one shot on goal. I mean there was the great move from the kickoff with his header over the bar, leave the penalty aside. I just don't think we get him involved enough in the opposition penalty area. I just think we need to, you know, have a look at things that might work or might not work. Like, Domenico Tedesco played Amadou Onana at centre-back for the last 10 minutes of that game on Saturday, changed his goalkeepers, and that's purely for experimentation ahead of the Euros. Again, look, sorry, I'm just repeating myself. It's not necessarily John O'Shea's fault. He's probably doing what's right best for him. It's the FAI's fault for somehow not having the manager in place by now.
I mean,
Mark Hanum's line that death is not Mark Hanum's deathless line that speed is not a metric by which we judge success in this. I mean, there's speed in one thing, but there's dragging your feet as well, you know. But however,
you were saying Belgium were out. Still, they're still in Ireland. They were training out there this morning.
Yeah, maybe Tedesco decided that he wanted his players to experience at least one intense outing in Dublin before they left. So, they're training. Busy morning in Abbotstown today. Ireland were training. Belgium were training before they fly to the England game tomorrow, and St. Pat's were training as well. So there was a nice moment between Quirín Kelleher and Marcelo Pitaluga, both Liverpool goalkeepers, of course.
Chatting
the side of the pitch before. Before training kicked off.
Yeah, well, I had an interesting morning yesterday morning.
Here we go.
I got a text yesterday morning from from some, not within the FAI strong, you know, the way they've got kind of logistics people to help the teams while they're over and all that. So it's a friend of mine is involved there in looking after visiting teams when they come across and all of that kind of stuff. So I got a text at 9:30 yesterday morning wanting to know, was there any chance I could source 10 tickets for Croke Park, for Tyrone in Dublin in Croke Park for Belgium?
No way, really? So be able to get
yeah,
them?
Yeah, and I managed to come up with them. So I'm not sure. I was led to believe that it could have been more kind of staff. I don't think this was a case of Doku and Lukaku sitting in Croke Park watching the game. I think it was more Belgian staff who were interested in the game and interested in seeing what it would look like. So yeah, there could have been some Belgium crests sitting amongst the Dublin crests.
I can only imagine Lukaku's anguish at sitting there watching these people who are actually incentivized to put the ball over the bar.
This game is made for me. This game is made for me. He'd make a good full forward, in fairness, wouldn't he?
Come here, I'm going to leave you on this note. Ahead of our visitors are Switzerland tomorrow night. Now managed, by the way, by Murat Yakin, who we may remember from Brian Kerr should remember him. His
he's a good
his
player.
Brother scored against Ireland, I think, in maybe all three games that they played.
That's who I'm thinking of, the brother. Yes, Hakan Yakin. How could I forget that first name?
Switzerland are going to the Euros, by the way, and this is not obsessing, but we may remember our Euros qualifier draw was France, Netherlands, and Greece. Switzerland finished second in the group behind Romania, ahead of Israel, Belarus, Kosovo, and Andorra.
We would have won that group, Gav.
It would all be so different, you know. We'd be using these games as our prep.
Kenny Luke,
as our prep to go to the Euros, you know. How and ever.
Heartbreaking.
Can't obsess about these things. Shane, thanks a million.
Cheers, Gav. Great stuff.
Thanks, everybody, for listening and supporting us here at the 42. We'll be back with a full compliment on the podcast next week. Our experimentation phase is over. Talk to you then.